Hey everybody, welcome to another pop culture kiki episode of Beyond the Blinds. As always, it's me, Kelly Williams.
And Troy McKeedy.
And we do have live shows coming up, Atlanta. Thank you for everyone who did buy tickets. Philly, we're gonna have to bully you because it's coming up. And yeah, we're excited to see whoever already bought tickets to the show, but...
Yes. Also, yeah, I mean, like, the bullying did work and we're really grateful for that. So now consider our foots on the necks of everybody else. But no, you guys have been people have been buying the tickets. Like, we're joking. And we both know that people don't buy podcast tickets like they're, you know, Glastonbury. I mean, it's a podcast. Like, well, we're showing up. We're going to be there. There's nothing to worry about.
Absolutely. But Atlanta, we weren't joking.
Yeah, we were truly bullying you, Atlanta.
But yeah, DC May 3rd is our first show. It's going to be a special one. It's going to be a fun one. We have some fun creators that will at least be at the show, maybe an introduction. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But May 3rd, DC, and then we have Chicago, St. Paul, Philly, Atlanta. Then it's Seattle. We have two shows. Portland, we have one. And then we go to LA and San Francisco. I just did that top of my head.
That is insane that you do that, like, oh, so easily.
Troy, I don't know if you heard, but an album was released.
What? By some underground indie artist, a beatnik poet.
And right now, I'm just going to remind people, if you don't like Taylor Swift, if you don't want to hear about her, there are timestamps. So just fast forward. Like, that's why the timestamps are there. Mm-hmm. Troy, what are your thoughts of the double album? Because I got the leak and I sent it to Troy and then I woke up to 31 songs. So I was like, wait, what the fuck?
Okay, so it took me a minute to find the time to like actually sit down and be like, all right, I'm really gonna like listen to this. So I listened to it yesterday. I don't like this album. Like, I actually, because I like Taylor's music. I'm not a huge fan of her personally, but like, I have favorite Taylor albums. There are albums that I've listened to, I can't even count how many times. There are songs from Taylor albums that are absolutely no skip for me. Like, if they come up on shuffle, I will listen. Like, I'm not a hater of her music by any means. I really was shocked by how much I didn't like the album. I thought all of it just kind of like, like, I was on like song 16 or 17 and I was like, I really couldn't tell if I was at the beginning of the album, the middle, the end, if I was at the first song, the third, the fourth, if it was almost done. It all sounds like one big 2-hour and 3-minute song to me. It feels so just like uninspired. Like, I don't know how you could have so little to say in 2 hours. Like, if you're going to do a 30-something song album, you would think that there'd be some sort of like real, like, passionate message that's trying to get across. And you're writing about like Charlie Puth. Like, it was just like, what is the reason for all of this? The writing, I think, is the absolute worst of her entire career. I think that she and Jack Antonoff's working relationship has, it's beyond the point of having run its course. Now I think it's actually detrimental to both of them that they take some time. Because, like, they are now a crutch to each other. And I watched this creator last night on TikTok say, like, how is it possible that the same woman who wrote Style, which is, like, one of the most incredible, almost a perfect pop song, like, as perfect as like a teenage dream, you know, like a truly like book stop, like a bookmark song. How is the same person writing these lyrics? Like, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, 31 songs. And basically this is a big ass Mad Libs where you just picked random big words from the dictionary to show off that you knew. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like really in shock by how much I didn't like it. What about you?
No, I mean, when I first got the leak, I was excited because I just listened to like some snippets and I was like, okay, I love Folklore. Folklore is my favorite Taylor album. Mm-hmm. So in on Folklore and Evermore, there are, it's slow, but there are still faster songs on it, mm-hmm, to like break up the monotony, I guess. And I was hoping for that. It honestly took me until yesterday to really sit down with the album. Because first of all, 31 songs is just too many. And I'm like, fuck, how do I break this up? Because I didn't want to just come on the podcast and be like, didn't like it, wasn't my fave, and keep it moving. But I just think 31 songs is a bit too much, which I don't know is fair to say, because obviously some people's like favorite artists haven't put out any music in the last decade. So I don't want to sound like ungrateful. And I'm also not like a songwriter. I'm not an artist like that. So I don't know the process, but it's just too slow overall. Like I said, like Folklore and Evermore at least had, you know, The Last Great American Dynasty and Betty and Gold Rush, like songs to kind of get you going. And like, for me listening, so many songs sounded like other songs.
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay. So the two that I picked up on like immediately was Love of My Life sounds just like White Horse. So much so that I was like, well, I already like White Horse. I'm just going to listen to that song rather than this new one. And then, let me see. Her song, I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, which is kind of like, I'll say like the most upbeat song on the whole album, sounded exactly like Supercut by Lorde.
So when I was listening, and I know that there are all these theories, people are like, oh, this was written by AI or whatever. Like, I don't think Taylor Swift would ever do anything like that. I just don't think, I don't think it goes that far. But I will say that there's no part of me that doesn't believe that some of these songs are just scrapped songs from old projects. Like, they, you can even feel, like, a lot of them sound very 1989 to me. Like, they sound like worse versions or early versions or songs that maybe became different songs or scraps, like scraps of fabric almost of like something greater. Like, it just didn't. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's like, not only was it like sonically really boring, like you said, it was just like, so it felt so tedious and monotonous to get through it. I was like, I'm only 15 in and I'm dying. All like, I could not believe. I just had this idea in my mind that because it was such a dense, big body of work, that she would have a lot of shit to say, a lot of shit to talk, that it would be experimental. Like, I even told you that I thought it would be more poetry-like. I thought it would be more just sort of, I mean, I hate to keep making the comparison, but I thought it would be more like Lana. I just did. I thought it would be more like I wrote a poem and turned that poem into a song. And it's the complete opposite. It is the same formulaic, quippy, fun songs that are meant to be headlines and meant to be taken, you know, they're meant to be kind of like attention grabbing sentences and shit, but it doesn't work. Like, it just, I really was in shock by how much I didn't like it, because there's no Taylor album that I really despise. I can listen to pretty much all of them, but this one, I was like, this is really bad music for somebody at this point in their career, and to have made such a big deal about this release and everything. Like, it's a very, I just think her and Jack, they gotta cut it, they gotta call it, it's done.
I completely agree with you. And what's crazy is like the way social media handles Taylor Swift now, and maybe it's always been like this, maybe I couldn't see it before, and I can totally admit that, but you know, I've been a fan of her since I downloaded her songs off LimeWire,
right?
And to put out a criticism and have people be like, you're not even a true Swiftie if you don't like this album, I'm like, okay then,
right? Like, are you not allowed to have opinions on the artists that you like? It's insane.
I do think this album may have hit different if it came out before Midnights. I think this album may have been like better as an in-between of Evermore and Midnights. I just think it would have played out better. But I mean, Midnights definitely grew on me. I was a little too hard on it when it was released.
Mm-hmm.
It grew on me. For these, I do have some top songs. I like The Black Dog, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, and The Bolter. Songs I don't like are songs that are fine is what I labeled these.
Songs that are fine.
Fresh Out the Slammer, Down Bad. And then the song But Daddy, I Love Him, which I think is going to get like a lot more plays. I think it'll probably be like her second single. Mm-hmm. But like listening to that and hearing her, knowing she's singing about or allegedly about Maddie Healy.
Dude, let's talk about it.
Okay, because the fact that she's like, you know, my fans made me break up with you. I'm like, just say he was bad for your brand.
I know.
Why don't you just like be honest and say, hey, I was dating like this person who has said racist, fat phobic, anti-Semitic things.
Mm-hmm.
But my fans made me dump him. It's like, so you were okay with all that?
I know. And like, it's almost like the critique of her being like the worst kind of white feminist is like, we've heard it 8 million times, but it's because it constantly applies and it constantly resurfaces. Mm-hmm. And it constantly shows itself to be like who she truly is. Like, and she just can't help herself almost. Like, I honestly, above all things with this album, the most shocking thing to me was the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I really was like, I was just sitting there in shock the whole time. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I kept like reading. I was even reading it too, because I was like, there's no way I'm really hearing this. And then I thought, when I kept seeing the headlines and the, you know, the quotes that people were pulling, I thought a lot of them were like a parody or a joke, or I thought people were like making shit up. And then to hear that it actually was in these songs, in the song that you declare is like your poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, I don't understand. I don't get. Do you agree with the people that are saying that this is like some kind of cash grab moment?
I mean, it wouldn't. I was trying to think about it. And I do think within the next 2-3 years, we'll have a Taylor Swift movie written, directed, songs by it. So I don't know if maybe she's just trying to get like everything she can out to the public. So when this movie happens, she can use these lyrics. I don't know. I was shocked.
I've never thought about that, but that actually, I do see like a movie or something happening at some point, and not a concert, like an actual movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like a real movie.
My least favorite songs are Fortnite, So High School. And obviously that's about like her and Travis, and I haven't been the most supportive of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But like, hearing that, I was like, she really is just like, she seems homeschooled. She went to high school. Did she have like the exact typical experience you or I had? No, but she was at least a junior in high school.
You know, I was also, I love Willow Smith's music.
Mm-hmm.
And she just released a new song off of her album that's going to be coming out soon. And at a certain point, I did have to turn this off. I'll be transparent and say I didn't make it to song 31. And will not probably ever, but I was like, I need to listen to something. And I turned on Willow, and it was just so night and day, like so like experimental and like weird and fun and like weird use of instruments and her doing all this crazy shit with her voice and like harmonies and runs and yodeling and riffs and all this crazy shit and like so much wild production. And I was just like, damn, like it almost highlighted more how fucking boring the album was. I was just like, God, like I really seriously, by the time I was at the middle of the album, I couldn't tell how long it transcended space and time. I was like, I'm in an alternate universe. 7 hours has gone by and it felt, I couldn't believe it. So not a fan, probably won't be revisiting. I'll just stick to Lover.
Well, I just want to talk about like two more things. The song, Thank You, Amy, that everyone thinks is about Kim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think it's a shot at Kim because she's had so many like Taylor adjacent people with Skims, and she was kind of like, I still don't fuck with Kim. Mm-hmm. But I think that song's about Karlie Kloss.
Really?
Because she's like, I hide your name in songs, I don't use your name. And I don't think she's calling Kim like Betty or
right.
Inez or whoever.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I still think it was a shot at Kim. Don't get me wrong. And then I saw Kim just between recordings put a picture of her and Carly in her story.
My eyes widened. You guys couldn't see it. Wow. Okay. That adds a lot of context. It makes a lot of sense. And even just like that, it's like, oh my God, like as a creative, are you not tired of finding ways to twist this Rubik's Cube for 10 fucking years?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Kim is always going to exist in this world. And so is Kanye. And like, I understand like the whole, I get it, but oh my God, how are people not sick of hearing her opinion on this? Even if it is just like a line or a quip in a song, like, it just makes, I don't know. I just like, I'm so sick of hearing her talk about that.
It's also confusing because now there are people trying to be like, Taylor's actually been in a relationship on and off with Maddie Healy for a whole decade. I'm like, we have a blind item from 2014 in our Taylor episode that lists out how it's going to be PR, how her and Maddie will be PR. My opinion on this is now when you Google Taylor in the 1975, those pictures with Carly don't pop up anymore. Like, Maddie's best friends with Jack Antonoff.
Okay, okay. It's all falling into place.
And, you know, I think Taylor and Travis are actually probably real, and I think that they love the fame and attention that they get.
Yeah.
But, like, I think that whole Maddie Healy thing was interesting. And kind of the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, because this is something we talk about all the time, that pop girls have to like reinvent themselves so often.
Sure.
But like Ed Sheeran can play in his flannel all day.
Sure.
I think it's time for Taylor to reinvent herself. And I feel like a bad girl supporter saying that. I get it.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying. It is, to me, it feels imperative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like it's detrimental to her career. I think this album being so poorly received and the way that people, I just think that it's like for her to move forward in any kind of way where people, because there was a time in her career, like from like 1989 to like
Reputation.
Yeah. Where like non-Taylor fans became like they were like, you just can't deny it. You can't help but like these songs. The people that couldn't stand her the most were the ones that were like, I can't believe I like this music, right? And like that was such a peak moment for her. And that momentum has just been completely squashed. Like now it really is from an outsider, and I'm not trying to be rude when I say this, but for people who are not Swifties, the delusion appears to be at a peak at this moment with people. I mean, even I've seen a million videos on TikTok of people reacting to the reaction, people on YouTube listening to the album and crying and shit. What are you crying about on this album? You're crying about her saying that Charlie Puth should be a bigger singer. You're weeping and freaking out and like hyperventilating shit. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I will say there are some sad songs, but I think critics are like want to say that this album isn't as what they hoped.
Sure.
But like everyone's afraid of fucking Swifties. And if you like write an article, you'll be attacked and be doxxed and your mom will get a hateful Facebook message. Like the people writing about it can't be honest about it. And even if you send a tweet being like, not my favorite album, all of a sudden you have 50 million people like sending you nasty messages.
I know. I can already hear the clicks of the response to what I'm saying right now. And I have to say, I just have to plant my feet and say, I don't care. Sorry, I really don't. Like, I'm allowed to critique this woman's album. I downloaded it legally. I used my Apple Music money to, I mean, you know what I mean? I streamed it. I did the things. I'm allowed to critique it. I don't fucking like it.
And it's also okay to be a fan of someone and not love their work. Like, yeah. Taylor's last two albums, I haven't been the biggest fan of, but her other albums are still some of my favorite of all time.
Yes. I'll probably listen to False God today.
Like, it's okay.
I'm not kidding. I'll probably turn it on as soon as we're done because it's in my head now.
Well, Troy, I want to hear about your time at Coachella and your desert lung and everything.
Desert lung kills me. So yeah, I went to Coachella, my first Coachella. I have to say, it was probably the best concert experience I've ever had in my entire life. And I'm saying that as somebody who's like seen a lot of great, I was just underneath Madonna's vagina, like two weeks ago or whatever. It was like, it exceeded every expectation I had times a million. I would go back. I don't know if I would ever become one of those people that goes to Coachella every year, but I would absolutely go if somebody was there that I cared enough about to go. I would, in a heartbeat, I would go again. It is grueling. It's intense, but it's like so worth it. And like the only parts of it that really fucking suck are getting there and leaving. Leaving is like, it's a death walk. Like it's the closest I feel I've been to hell. I'm not kidding. It was like really bad. Like leaving sucks, but it sucks because it's like rewarding because you had such an incredible day and like you really did all the things, you know? The heat is oppressive. Yes, you are out in the dirt, but like, I don't know, it's very manageable. And like, it's kind of an experience where you can turn it into whatever you want it to be. Like each day that we were there, we had a sort of extreme of all the experiences. So the first day we were like, we did the whole camping out for Lana thing. We were, yeah.
You camped?
Not camp, but I stood in place for 12 hours.
That's camping.
Yeah. And like we took turns leaving our spot, but we held a barricade spot for the entire day from 1 p.m. to midnight. Yeah. and we still got to experience stuff. And it was cool because we just stayed at that stage and watched whoever was there. So I got to see Sabrina and Lil Uzi Vert, who I cannot believe people don't make more Cisco comparisons for. He is our Cisco. Like, I don't know if you guys understand that or not, but we are looking at Cisco's son. But yeah, so we stood there the entire day. I'm gonna post pictures later today finally because I've been editing them, but like we were as close as we could physically get to Lana. Like I saw the motorcycle, the bike moment. And so that was like the most intense, grueling, hardcore day. Like it was about as hardcore I think as you can get if you're not actually sleeping there.
Mm-hmm.
Second day was a little bit more chill. Like we had like figured things out, we knew what to do, like we knew what we could bring in and how to get it in and all the stuff. And then the third day was like the most Coachella day. It was my favorite day. It was like walk around, take the pictures, hang out, ride the Ferris wheel, eat the churro, like lay down in the grass, eat the edible. You know, it was very like just like relaxing and fun, and we were just like fucked up all day, and like it was incredible. It was my favorite thing, one of my favorite things I've ever done, honestly.
And you got to see Gwen, and Gwen got to see you.
Gwen looked at me like I was so close to her. I was looking up at her face, like I was right in front of her, and she reached her hand out to me while I was recording her.
That video was like chills.
And then my hand was like just trembling. But the other thing that I wanted to mention too was that the people. I understand why people call Coachella like an adult playground or like an adult paradise. It is, the people are so kind. And because when you go from stage to stage, it's like you're surrounded by this niche group that you immediately have something in common,
mm-hmm.
this artist that you're waiting for, you know? So it's like, it's damn near impossible not to make friends. Like it's pretty much like, I cannot believe how many people we like connected with, talked to, like really hung out with. It would be really, really hard to go to Coachella and not make friends. It's just impossible. As far as famous people, like there was an awareness. Like, I knew that there were famous people around me. Like, I knew that Barry was somewhere near me watching Sabrina. Like, I knew it because we were looking, she was looking in his direction, and I knew that he was there. But I also understand now why celebrities go to Coachella, because the anonymity, like, you can be Katy Perry and walk around Coachella and people not really realize it. And even if they do, they just kind of like will either take a picture, maybe ask you for one, or like, it's not like a, you can frolic. And like, when you see those pictures of Vanessa Hudgens, like jumping in the air and like her hair, like full, like Charlie Brown, I get it. I'm like, yeah, because you're free here completely. But yeah, it was like, it was really cool. It was really, really, really magical. I would absolutely go back. And I feel like the next year I go, I would be like a pro. Like, I would know all the things. I would know what not to do, what to do. Like, yeah, all of it.
Who is your favorite performer overall?
No Doubt. Honestly, it was really special because it just felt like they knew that it was like, maybe, you know, the last time that they're probably going to do that, maybe. And also, I will say the other thing that's really cool about Coachella is like, it's each artist's, it's like the best version of their self. Like, they want their Coachella set to be something that's like really special in their career. Mm-hmm. They're not coming to do like a gig. So you see this very, it's almost like a mini tour in one show for each person, if that makes sense. So like, No Doubt's whole set felt so like a celebration of their whole career. It wasn't just like a gig that they were doing, you know?
Did you see Kid Cudi break his leg on by jumping off stage?
So we didn't understand why Kid Cudi disappeared. Like, it because obviously I went to see Kid Cudi, you know?
Right.
I mean, clearly. And for the last two songs, everybody was like losing their shit still because they were like his big club hits, like the remix of Pursuit of Happiness and stuff from like the movie X and stuff, like the big ones that people were like waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
On stage though. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting of him to like close out his set by just playing the song. I didn't realize what was going on.
The way he jumped, I was like, yeah, you're gonna break your leg if you jump that way, Kid Cudi.
I will say he looked so good and his smile was like radiating the light. Yeah, he was like so beautiful. But yeah, I would say No Doubt was probably my favorite just because it was so nostalgic and felt so like special. And Gwen was like feeling herself. You could tell like her voice was really strong. Of course, obviously, Lana was like the reason that we came, and that was really mm-hmm. special. And the fact that we like actually accomplished our goal of like seeing her as close as we wanted, getting the exact spot that we wanted, we got the pictures, we got the video, like it all worked out 20 times better than I ever could have even imagined it in my dreams. So it was great.
Is Zach vlogging it or did he vlog it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, cool. I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to record like a full break, you know, like an hour to hour and a half long breakdown of everything that happened. And I'm going to post it on my Patreon.
One thing I think you'll be proud of me. I started watching Shaws of Sunset.
Yeah, I saw that on the list. I was like, I didn't put that down. I was like, what's going on?
I'm only like a season and a half in. I have never seen people like these Shaws of Sunset. Gigi is who Lala wishes she was.
Oh my god, that's so funny. That's
and hard. Like, Reza looks like a gay Persian Mark Cuban. And then I'm obsessed with MJ. MJ gives us both everything and nothing at the same time.
Don't you like feel like you have such a different appreciation for her now from being on Traitors?
Absolutely. She's so sweet and her mom is so mean, but the Vegas episode is like the second episode of the series with her like drunk falling into the bathtub.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And puking at the club. I was like, MJ reminds me of an Audrina Dina mix, and I love her.
It's funny too, because they're like 50. Like, that was such an odd thing about Shaz. Like, they're not young, you know? Like, Gigi, I think, obviously is the youngest, but Reza was like 45 or 46 or something when they were doing that the first season.
I'm like, is Tom Sandoval trying to be like Gigi with his knives on him? Gigi's like, I got knives everywhere. I know how to use a gun, know how to stab you with a knife. Whatever you need, I got it.
Oh my God, Lala really is like a Gigi wannabe, which is hilarious because they both grew up like so wealthy and like in the most like affluent. Right. You know, it's like, we're like, Gigi, why do you think that you're like a mob boss? Like, why? Like, you're a beautiful young girl that grew up shopping on Rodeo Drive, like as a teenager.
There was some fight between Asa and Gigi. And Asa was like, well, my daddy doesn't bankroll my life. And everyone's like, you went too far, even though Gigi was calling her like broke and like ugly and a terrible dresser. And was like, you can't talk about the family money. We're not going to do that.
What do you think about Asa? She's controversial.
I like her so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think she gives like cool girl vibes that the show desperately needs. Mm-hmm. I think if you have someone like Gigi, you also have to have an anti-Gigi, which is her.
Sure.
But I did see that she's with a Jackson, so I'm interested to see if that gets brought up at all.
Yeah, she eventually, she, you know how sometimes like a reality cast member will like get too into the marketing of it all? Of like using it to like do businesses and stuff?
Yeah.
She really, really got like over the top with that. Like, because I was a big fan of hers when the show started, but then it just became like a big ass infomercial for her. And they eventually did end up like letting her go. But it's the best show. It's the thing about Bravo shows where the cast members already knew each other is it just hits different. Like, MJ and Reza have had sex. You know? Like,
and Reza is so fucking funny.
I know. He's so good. He's such a good reality star. That's exciting that you're watching that. You've like, it never gets bad, by the way. It only gets better and better and better and better. There's no bad seasons. It's always great. Like, up to the last season that they filmed, it's incredible.
I've heard MJ's wedding is one of the craziest weddings to ever be filmed ever. So I'm excited to eventually get to that.
Oh, just wait till you meet Tommy, her husband. He's like so probably like every Boston gross guy that you ever met ever.
Cool.
Yeah. Speaking of reality TV, I wanted to talk about Farrah Abraham, who was just recently on Dumb Blonde. You guys know I love the Dumb Blonde podcast. I am obsessed with her. I think that she is such a great interviewer. I love the kind of guests that she has on. Like, they're exactly my vibe. Like, Bob Wives. Like, you know, just random shit like that. So she had Farrah on. And the other thing that I like about her is that when she has people on that are sort of like bimbo forward or women that have done sex work or anything like that, like, because she's done it, there's no judgment and it feels like a safe space for people to talk about like stuff that maybe they would get judged on other shows or whatever. And I just thought like it was probably the best interview Farrah's ever had in her whole career. And it's because, not that I think Farrah is like a perfect person, obviously, but people have her on their shows to attack her.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring her on to embarrass her and to get ratings or views. And we've been seeing it for like over a decade, like Dr. Phil, Bethany, like they have her on to make her look dumb. And then she falls into the trap and it happens. She was so like kind and polite and funny and down to earth and relatable. And like, I was just like, who is this woman? She talked a lot about like the extensive therapy that she's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, it seems like she's kind of addicted to therapy, but I mean, I guess there are worse things to be addicted to. And she goes to these like crazy like retreats and shit where like she just went to like a love retreat where they like did all this intense healing, trying to figure out why you choose the relationships you choose, healing your inner child, like. And she uses a lot of therapy speak, so you know it's genuine. She's really in it. The way that she talks about Deb is so mature in comparison to how she used to. Sophia was also on. There were a couple moments with Sophia that were like, you know, it's like those Farrah moments where you kind of like, it feels like the breath gets knocked out of you, where you're like, oh, like you just bounce up. There was a moment where like she asked Farrah, like, you know, they were talking about OnlyFans and stuff, of course. And she was like, well, what do you think? Like, you know, if Sophia came to you one day and said like she wanted to do an OnlyFans, like, what would you say? And she's like, well, you have to be 18. So anytime soon. It's like, duh, that wasn't the question. Why would you do that? Why'd your mind go there? So then the headline, of course, got picked up that like Farrah Abraham says that she like would let Sophia do OnlyFans right now underage. But I thought it was a great interview. I highly suggest anybody interested in Teen Mom to listen. It was really, really good.
Well, I'll be listening once this podcast is over.
You will love it. Like, I was just so pleasantly surprised to be like, oh, like a happy, it felt good to be like, I like Farrah in this moment, you know?
You know, I actually just had this conversation about Farrah because she was trying to tell me Farrah is the worst teen mom. And I was like, no, because I the way I've always looked at Farrah compared to like an Amber is Farrah's all defense mechanism. Like her anger is such like, God knows what Deb and Michael did in that house. But yeah, I've always seen her as someone who just has put wall after wall after wall after wall up, when there was this like really short moment, I don't know if you remember, in Teen Mom where like she was really trying with Sophia and like brought her to Daddy Derek's like grave and tried to open up about it and met his family. And it did seem like at that point she was trying to turn over a new leaf or something.
I 1000% agree. And she actually talked about that, about like her trauma defense mechanism being like her short fuse. And, you know, it is a protection for her. But I personally do not listen. I don't think being a sex worker and being really open about it means that you're like a bad mom. Like, I just don't think that in comparison to what other teen moms have done and what we've seen them do, like the one thing that you can always say is that Sophia has technically always been taken care of. And Farrah is a fucking hustler, whether it's a wacky furniture business or a frozen yogurt stand or allegedly selling poop or whatever. The woman is going to make money and she's going to like support her daughter. You know what I mean? Now, whether it's in a healthy way, that's up for debate. I'm not a parent myself, but I'm just saying, like, in comparison to other teen moms, i.e. like fucking Janelle, Amber, like, come on. Are you seriously going to say that Farrah's a worse mom than Janelle?
I'm glad. I'm glad that we got to talk about that.
Yeah, me too. You always need a teen mom moment.
Now would be a good time to let you know that this episode is sponsored by ZocDoc. Are you that one friend in the friend group who loves to treat yourself? It's okay. We all do it. You know, get a pedicure and opt for the extra 10-minute foot massage with green tea-infused lotion. Refuse to make coffee at home because that fancy coffee shop is right downstairs. Always buy double at a sale because it's actually like saving money. Well, if you treat yourself to the top options with everything in life, why settle with finding a doctor? It is your health after all. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified patient reviews. So don't settle. Go for the best and find the right doctor for you. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them. Once you find the doctor you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist. And these doctors all have verified reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-tier patient reviews, credible doctors and specialists. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. For me, I absolutely hate going to the doctor. I had a finger issue for a long time, and I wasn't going to get it fixed. I was buying braces myself for it, but I'm getting it fixed now because of ZocDoc. I don't have to leave my apartment. And one thing I really hate is those like paper garments that they give you while you're sitting there. It's all uncomfortable for me. So being able to do it from the comfort of my own home is the most important thing. So go to ZocDoc.com/blinds and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/blinds. Again, ZocDoc.com/blinds.
This week's episode is also sponsored by 3-Day Blinds. I don't know about you guys, but when I sleep, I need the room to literally be pitch black. And I've been a poor college student. I've been poor many, many, many moons in my life. And I've had some terrible blinds and window treatments in my apartments that are actually looking back so embarrassing. And I don't want to get into too much detail about, but I hate when you want a room to be dark and it isn't dark. And no matter what you do, you prop stuff up against the blinds, you try and like move them a certain way or whatever, you still have light beaming in, waking you up in the morning. That will ruin my entire day. There's a better way to buy blinds and window treatments, and it's called 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the US, and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. We can shop for almost anything at home. Why not shop for blinds at home too? 3-Day Blinds has local, professionally trained design consultants who have an average of 10 plus years of experience that provide expert guidance on the right blinds for you in the comfort of your home. Just set up an appointment and you'll get free, no obligation quote the same day. Not very handy? The expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. The thing that I like about 3-Day Blinds, I'm also not very handy. That comes as no surprise to any of you, but I don't know how to do things like that. And I always would rather a professional just do it for me because I'm an idiot. So I appreciate when a company offers that. When it comes to home renovation, we all have questions. What blinds should you get to cover arched windows? Is it time to upgrade to motorized blinds? What blinds are better, roller shades or Roman shades? No matter your unique need, from motorization to home automation, to room darkening or child safety, with 3-Day Blinds, you choose from thousands of options that fit any budget or style. And with actual samples, you won't be guessing about your blinds and what they will look like. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds, buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, and shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/beyond. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/beyond. One last time, that's 3daiblinds.com/beyond.
50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios in Wondery comes the competition.
Host Shima Oliyei was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now she is returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks of 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest, and how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after?
Follow the competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of the competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. I want to talk about Kylie Jenner and Timothée Chalamet at the moment.
Okay.
So on Twitter, it's being like talked about a lot that allegedly she is pregnant with his child. Mm-hmm. And apparently it all comes back to Daniel Tosh, because he talked about it on his podcast and was like, "Nah, I saw Kylie Jenner. She's pregnant," like just so casually.
Mm-hmm.
What? That's crazy. I don't know what else to say.
I know. Well, it's crazy to think like, whenever any man gets forever tied to that family, I get nervous. And I know that you guys have your thoughts about Mr. Chalamet. I like him, I like Timothy. I like him as an actor. I like him as a red carpet king. I know that he's an asshole or whatever. He's allegedly mean. I don't care. I love Timothée Chalamet's work. I like his movies. I like going to see him and stuff. And it like freaks me out to think like that this, you know, it's scary. Signing your life away to Kris Jenner is scary. It's terrifying.
Nothing more to add. I just wanted to let it be known that this rumor is going around, and it's been going around for a little bit, but now it's starting to pick up a little more traction, I guess.
He's tampering in dark-sided stuff.
He's dark-sided.
Gargles and slinkets. I can see it already. I want to talk just really quickly about Quiet on Set drama, because obviously we covered it really heavily, and in the past like few weeks, I would say, especially in the past couple of days, like the negative press surrounding that documentary has really picked up a lot. And it turns out like nobody involved in it really knew what it was going to be or what it was for. Nobody was told that it was going to be on the ID network. I know some of them had issues with it being on the ID network. I think it was Alexa Nicholas that said, like, I didn't even know what that network was. And like, I feel like the people involved deserve like a bigger platform than being on the ID network, like maybe like a Netflix or a streaming or something, which I do kind of understand. I think it's crazy that they bamboozled everybody. Like Mark Summers also said that he sat down to do an interview and was not told what it was going to be about and didn't know that he was being tied to that. He also didn't know that the cameras were rolling when he got up to leave, and that they were going to use it. Also, I think it's important to note that Mark Summers was not of the generation of Nickelodeon that show was even about. Like Mark Summers was there. He was the first generation. Like he was there years before Ariana Grande. Like I think he said, like, I've never even met any of those kids. He was there before all that.
Right. I was going to say before Kenan and Kel.
Yeah. Like he really, yeah. And I think he said, like, I've met Kenan, not even through Nickelodeon. Like I've just met him. Like, so he really had no insight on that at all. But I think that's like, it was such a weird, even seeing him there, I was just like, why did they ask Mark Summers to talk about this?
Honestly, I was like, okay, he must be one of the good guys. But then when he didn't come back, I was like, what the fuck's going on?
Right. And then the person who's, I think, gotten the most press was Raquel. Raquel Lee, is it Ballou? I think is how you say her last name. I don't want to butcher it, but she's been very vocal about the fact that when they did that follow-up sit down that we had talked about and said it was like kind of pointless, that they didn't even ask her to be a part of it. So they literally did the exact thing to her that she talked about happening to her in their documentary. They left her out and ignored her because they didn't think that she was important enough to, I guess, follow up with, which is like crazy. So that sucks. Cause I remember like praising the way that it was made. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it was so cool that they actually did a really good job with this. And it sucks that, I don't know, that just sucks, you know?
It does feel like a very much a money grab on their behalf, because even like thinking about Quiet on Set more, I do think there should have been two documentaries, one about Dan and then one about all like the child predators, because in that documentary, Dan doesn't seem so bad because we don't hear anyone saying that he was inappropriate with them, maybe like rude or something, but they could have read excerpts from Jeanette McCurdy's book. Like they could have done more to like really put on that. Like Dan was doing, he was abusing like labor laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It almost feels like for legal purposes, they were like, well, we have to present this in a way that Dan has technically not been sexually inappropriate with these kids. Brian Peck was. Dan was just mean and hard to work for. And it's like, okay, yeah, but like there's so much more to it than that. And I agree, like they should have just given him his own separate thing. Like it was just too much to try and include in one thing, I feel. But Yeah, I guess that's like still, I mean, we're still going to be hearing about all of it, I guess, for the next few weeks, because like they've all been very vocal about how they were not fucking with it. So.
Well, good for them for all speaking out against it, honestly.
Yeah, I totally agree.
One thing we might see coming up in the next few weeks, trigger warning and also allegedly at the top of this, Mark Estes from the Montana Boys, who's dating Kristen Cavallari. Mm-hmm. On a Reddit thread, it was said that originally Mark was at Montana State University and he ended up being forced to leave because he assaulted someone to the degree where it was felony assault. And he's not allowed, or allegedly not allowed, back on the MSU campus until 2026. And then there are more videos coming out. Jordy Cray on TikTok just posted a video of the Montana Boys saying the N-word.
Mm.
So, Montana Boys, I hope you enjoyed your 8 minutes of fame. But, like, this is like the problem, I think. Well, you've talked about it before with influencers, right? Like, these people got super popular super fast. We know nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not like disappointed or something, but it's kind of like, yeah, that seems to add up.
Yeah, when you look at them, I'm like, I was just kind of waiting for the N-word scandal. I was like, when and how? In what platform? Will it be Instagram Live? Will it be an old tweet? Like, what are we going to get? Because it's going to happen. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
No, so we have Mark doing that. And then Kristen has some holistic doctor on. And one thing I've noticed with some fitness influencers is sunblock is bad for you, is what they're trying to say. Mm. And your body makes its own, like, UV protection. Hi, as a pale Irish girl, wear fucking sunblock.
Listen, also, there's a misconception that people of color don't need sunblock. I don't know what separate class white people get taken out of elementary school and like whispered in their ear, right, that black people don't, that their skin color can't change. Like, I'm not so black that I, you know what I mean? Like, my skin color changes. I tan, I burn, and I can get melanomas. So people of color also need to wear sunscreen. And I don't know where that comes from, that black people don't. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, just honestly, shame on Kristen for like platforming that. I think people still really look up to Kristen Cavallari.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they love her since she was a 16-year-old little bitch. I love that was like, you guys know what I mean. But since she was that on Laguna Beach, people have really held on to her. I think if you like dive a little bit deeper with Kristen, you won't want to like fuck with her.
Yeah. Our skin makes a natural protection against the sun. We don't need sunscreen.
We do not need any vaccines against polio.
You should check out my collaboration with Chinese Laundry. Should we talk about Emma Roberts' Architectural Digest? We waited long enough.
That saved me after our recording last week.
Oh, I loved it so much. Me and Zach talked about it for like an hour last night. I love her, and I love that goddamn house. And I know that she's an evil little fuck. Like, trust me, I know. Emma Roberts is about as evil as they come. She is not acting when she is playing any Ryan Murphy character. Like, I know it, but her brand of cunt is just something fun to admire. And her house is the most down to earth, livable celebrity home I feel like I've ever seen.
It was so unexpected how normal it was. It felt like a Cape Cod cottage that you would visit your grandma at or something.
Yeah. And like all of her little, like, you know, sometimes like celebrities will try and like they'll show you personal things in their home to make it seem like it's homey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I had this when I was a kid and now it sits here, you know, like, or whatever. But in her house, like, you could tell those items pretty much all really were from like different moments of her life. Like, she has a little tiny chair up against her her coffee table that was her timeout chair when she was a little girl, and now it's her son's living room chair Like, she's a doll collector, so there's like weird little dolls everywhere. Like, those things you can't really fake.
Her face when she was introducing the doll wall was my favorite part of the entire thing. She's like, I know it's weird. You're going to think it's weird.
And how funny was it that she had to like stand behind a dresser and like move it with her hip to even get to the wall? I was like, damn, this is really her home. Like, this shit is like so comforting. Like, I just wanted to curl up on her couch. I was like, damn, that's my favorite kind of home. I love eclectic homes like that.
Well, how did you feel about her bedroom? Because that was a lot for me to take in. I don't think I could hang out in there. A lot of different floral prints. And when she was like, it looks like a painting, I was like, I guess.
Yeah, it felt very specific to her. But then again, that's like another thing that I like. Like, I kind of like when I walk into somebody's house and it's so the opposite of me, but it feels so them. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's just so that person, it makes you appreciate it more. It's almost like Dorinda's house. Like, mm-hmm. I would never decorate my home the way Dorinda has decorated her home in the Berkshires, but I love it because it's so Dorinda, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was great. Another like great Architectural Digest episode.
Really quick, I just wanted to talk about David Beckham and Mark Wahlberg, because David Beckham is suing Mark Wahlberg and Mark is an enemy of the pod.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently Mark Wahlberg owns part of that F45 workout place that you see kind of around the city, and I'm sure other cities are aware. And he asked David to be a part of it. David put in roughly $10 million, posted about it to his followers. He never saw any money.
That's what you get for going into business with a Wahlberg. You should know better, David.
But Team David, I don't need to know any more information. Just wanted to make it clear that on this podcast, we're Team David Beckham.
No, seriously. I just can't allow this week to go by and not praise my queen, Miss Kirsten Dunst. Who, I saw Civil War. I saw it at the IMAX. I saw it the night it came out. I pre-bought the ticket like fucking weeks before. I was not going to miss the IMAX experience of Kirsten Dunst. I don't know when I'll get it again. And that movie was absolutely incredible. I think as of right now, it's the highest budget A24 film, which is really cool because it's like, it's still an A24 movie, so it's like, it has all the elements that you love, but just like massive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen like, it's obviously it's very split. People are trying to turn this into a political movie. Kirsten Dunst says that it's not a political movie, but of course it's a political movie. I mean, especially during the time that it's coming out. But her performance is just so unbelievable. I truly believe it is one of the best of her career, if not, well, it's not the best. I can't say that in a good conscience, but it is up there. And the people that have an issue with this movie for it being too violent or making them uncomfortable or whatever, like, you're actually missing the point that is like the reason that the movie was made. War should make you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Violence against like children and like helpless people should make you feel uncomfortable, and like that was the point of the movie, was to like let you know it was no frills, no, like, it was about as realistic as you could possibly get, and they show everything. Like, it's very detailed, and I just think that it's important for everybody to see it, and it should make you feel weird. Like, if it doesn't, you have no soul. Like, it's a movie about a civil war, and it has like a Black Mirror feeling about it, where it's like, this could happen. If it did happen, it would look like this, and it would be sooner than maybe we think. Like, it feels so close to our reality still.
Like November 2024?
Yeah. So, shout out to Kirsten. This press cycle has been just chef's kiss, beyond absolute perfection. please read all the articles that she's in and all of the, watch all of the interviews that she's doing, because she's in a great era of her career where she's like, she's a grown ass woman now. She's being seen as a grown ass woman. And it feels like people are finally praising her for being such a diverse, amazing actor. So shout out to Kirsten Dunst. I guess I don't really have a lot to say about this. We can end the episode on this. Like, Jaguar Wright is back. And she's just did another interview. I highly suggest everybody listening to this go watch her most recent YouTube interview on, let me pull it up. She was on the, if you look up, I guess if you just type in Jaguar Wright full interview part two, it'll pop right up. But of course, I mean, you know, Jaguar was the whistleblower on Diddy, like when it was still really fucking scary to talk about this shit. And the stuff that she said about him was so incriminating and so dark and crazy. Like, she's lucky to be alive. And she did have some crazy shit happen to her after she talked about it. She talks a lot about her relationship with Cat Williams and like how he like basically taught her how to be a vocal person and be a whistleblower on stuff. And it was very, very, very eye-opening. Really good. And I just want to give credit to her because she deserves it. And now, of course, everybody, you know, she's the hottest ticket in town because the Diddy stuff, everything she said was true. Mm-hmm. And trying to say that she was crazy.
That's how it always is, right?
Totally. Every single time. And she even brought that up about Orlando. And she was like, I know him. He's one of the most brilliant people I've literally ever met in my entire fucking life. Like, she basically said that he's been pretending to be crazy because it's easy, like it keeps him safe.
I feel like you and I have almost said the same thing. Like, you just have to listen to him because he is telling like the truth.
Mm-hmm. So shout out to her. Shout out to Jaguar. Like, I hope that she remains safe and protected and that nothing bad happens to her. But yeah, that's all I got.
And with that, we will leave you. We do have two super long fucking episodes coming out this week too.
Yeah.
Our Patreon episode took us almost 2 hours to record. I don't know what it'll be edited down to. And our public episode is well over an hour.
Yeah, you're gonna eat good. You're gonna have full bellies this week. Trust me.
And we can't wait to see some of you live at the DC show next week. And yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
Love you. Bye.